Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hail by Daphne Loveling. Narrated by Troy Duran and Gillian Macy. Prologue. Hail. A favor will kill you faster than a bullet. My dad told me that once. Turns out he was only half right. A bullet might kill you faster, but a favor can kill you deader. Even if you live to tell the tale. The story I'm about to tell you is my tale. I'm still alive. Physically, at least. Every other way. Draw your own conclusions. 1. Hail. God damn it, Angel, I complain, tossing back my third shot in the last 10 minutes. I just fucking got back from a run. I ain't the only patch holder in this MC. Send someone else. I brought the bottle and the shot glass with me into chapel because I was pretty sure I wasn't going to like what I was about to hear from my prez. I wasn't wrong. I looked from Angel to Beast, his VP, hoping my words will have an effect. But I already know it's no damn use. I know that, Angel grunts. But you're the best man I got for this job, Hale. I need someone to go down to Ironwood and represent our club with Dos Santos. I need someone to act as my eyes and ears. Someone I can trust. I'm one of the only men without an old lady or kids, you mean? I grumble. Beside him, Beast gives me a grin. That too. Even as I argue with them, I know it's a lost cause. Angel's my president. If he says I'm going down to represent him on business with the new Ironwood chapter of the Lords of Carnage MC, I'm going. As much as I want to bitch about it, that was never in question. So, swearing a blue streak in my head, I lean back in the chair. I look across at them over the dark, carved mahogany table in our chapel. And I listen to Angel tell me what he needs from me. Setting up this pipeline between Ironwood and us is big business for our club, he explains, drumming his hands on the table. We need to be sure everything's running like a well-oiled machine from jump. I'm sending you down to give the Ironwood chapter's prez a hand. You're going to be my eyes and ears down there, like I said. You'll be helping Axel and his men set up this partnership with the Dos Santos cartel like it should be. Ironwood will be receiving shipments from Dos Santos to the south. Next, Ironwood moves some of that product to the west to sell to the gangs in that part of the state. They move the rest of it up here, to our chapter. Then we take over, moving north up to Cleveland, and schedule a drop-off at the ports. What kind of product are we looking at? I ask. Opioids, mainly. Smack. Synthetics. Supply and demand, brother, Angel snorts. But his tone is grim. Occasionally guns, if and when they're needed. How they moving it? Angel looks over at Beast. The Ironwood chapter set up a garage, Beast continues. Car and truck repair. The shop's a front for moving product. They hoist the vehicles up on the lift, stash the product underneath during the repair, sew it back up. Beast wraps his knuckles on the table. Good to go. So, I'm just there to supervise? I ask skeptically. Yeah, mostly. Supervise, be my rep, make sure it's set up right. Report back to me with any issues. Angel leans back. Take Tank with you. Have another set of eyes on it. The two of you can make sure everything's going like it should be. Go on the first run with Ironwood down to meet the Dos Santos cartel. Check shit out. You'll be my goodwill ambassador to smooth shit over between him and Chaco. Angel shows his teeth. Make sure their working relationship starts on solid ground. I stifle a sigh. It's a simple enough job, but my gut sure as hell doesn't like it. So I tell my gut to shut the fuck up. I'm going to Ironwood. God damn it to hell. Gonna miss you, brothers, Stryker says beside me, clapping me on the back. Don't forget to write, Bullet jokes. We ain't gonna be gone that long, I growl. A week, maybe two at the most. Back out of the main room of the clubhouse, I'm two more shots into the bottle of Jack, but I feel sober as a damn judge. Unfortunately. I signal to Jude, one of the hangarounds who's getting ready to prospect, to bring me a beer. Less than a minute later, it appears in front of me. Jude's the little brother of Angel's old lady, Jewel. He and I had a less than auspicious first meeting, to put it mildly. But I have to admit, he's starting to grow on me. Not that I'd let him see that, of course. You took long enough, I growl. I'm worth the wait, Jude smirks, batting his eyes at me. Fuck you with that shit, I grunt, disgusted. Jude just grins. You know you love me. I snort as he moves away. That kid's mouth is going to get him in trouble one of these days. I take a swig of the amber liquid and let Stryker and Bullet goad me some more. I make sure not to give them the satisfaction of letting them see they're riling me even more than I already am. They know I'm pissed, but they don't know the half of it. It ain't that I'm pissed at Angel. I'm just pissed in general. The last couple months, I've been away from Tanner Springs about 75% of the time. I'm tired as shit, and I was looking forward to spending a weekend swimming in pussy, followed by a few days of fishing by myself at Conigat, a safe house the club owns that's on a decent trout stream. Going down south to the newly formed Ironwood chapter of the MC is just about the last fucking thing I want to do. I have my reasons, and they're not just that I was looking forward to some downtime. Those reasons don't matter to my club president. And they shouldn't. They're mine alone to deal with. My personal problems ain't the club's problems. Doesn't mean I gotta be happy about it, though. Besides Stryker, Tank shrugs. Unlike me, he's fine with being chosen to go down to Ironwood. Hell, look at it this way, he says philosophically. Think of it as new pussy. A whole new landscape. He lifts his hand and spans an imaginary scene in front of him. We got at least a week to sample all the decent tail Ironwood has to offer. Tank's words are meant to cheer me up, but they don't. Pussy's pussy, I growl. I've had enough to know there ain't enough difference to make a change of geography worth my while. Variety's the spice of life, brother, Stryker grins. Besides, with you gone, we got less to compete with up here. Yeah, good riddance, motherfucker, Bullet snorts and hits his bottle against Stryker's. It's true, I get more than my fair share of the pussy around here. The club girls like me, what can I say? And I've turned enough female heads in Tanner Springs that it doesn't take long to draw a crowd of them at any civilian bar either. There's always going to be women around wanting to take a walk on the wild side with a big bad biker who ain't hard on the eyes. Even in the club, I've got a reputation for liking a nice piece of ass. This is my life, and I conduct it the way I want. I make damn sure the women I bed know the only thing I'm after is a good fuck. They get what they want. I get what I want. Everyone goes away happy. Though lately, it's been getting a little old. Not sure why. I guess too much of a good thing can be, well, too much, sometimes. As Stryker and Bullet continue to needle me, I tune them out and look around the clubhouse bar. Over to one side, Beast and Thorn are straddling stools at a high-top table. Their old ladies, Brooke and Isabel, are there with them. Brooke, a petite blonde, leans into Beast as he talks. Beast's almost twice as big as she is. Brooke is small, but she's even more of a badass than some of the men in here. She could probably take down one of the prospects with a single punch. Brooke laughs at something Beast says, and he gives her a smirk that tells everybody in this place that he's fucking gone for her. Not that I can blame him. She is smoking hot and tough as nails. On the other side of the table, Thorn murmurs something in Isabel's ear that makes her blush and slap at his chest. That fucker can turn his Irish brogue on and off like a spigot, and he's used that fact to melt more than one pair of panties in his day. But ever since he met Isabel, it's like the rest of the female population doesn't even fucking exist. Don't get me wrong, I'm happy for them both. I'm happy for Angel, too, and his old lady, Jewel. But shit, lately it seems like everyone around here's put their balls in a sling and handed them over to some woman or other. Except for Stryker and Tank and Bullet and me. Sounds fucking terrifying, to be honest. Not to mention dangerous. Once you give your heart to a woman, you open yourself up to risk. You're putting your safety, and hers, on the line. Life in an outlaw MC is dangerous. Loyalty to the club is what keeps us all alive. Knowing your brothers have your back and you have theirs is vital. Any extra attachment is a weakness to be exploited. Old ladies can be targeted. So can kids. Our fucking club wouldn't do that, of course. We may not exactly be Boy Scouts, but we ain't savages. But the same can't be said of our enemies. Or hell, even our allies. I ain't saying I don't trust my brothers who have families. I would trust each and every one of these men with my life. But I know how divided loyalty can fuck with your head. It can make your objectives less clear. Make you hesitate when you should strike. So, I'll keep my dick and my balls firmly in my own goddamn possession. Thank you very much. Say hey to Axel and Rourke, Bullet tells us, referring to the president and VP of the Ironwood chapter. He reaches for my bottle of whiskey before I can stop him and pours himself a shot. Hey, ain't one of the Ironwood guys your cousin Hale? Yeah, I mutter sourly. Mal, their sergeant at arms. Even as I say it, my lip curls. Fucking Mal, of all people, is the one who upholds the laws of the club. The one who keeps order. The irony is pretty damn rich. I'm not sure how Bullet knows Mal and I are related, and I don't ask. I tell myself I don't care. The bad blood between my cousin and me is personal. It goes back years. It's got nothing to do with the club. Or the present day. I need to remember that. I need to push that shit way down deep. So deep it doesn't have a chance of resurfacing. Along with everything else in my past that makes this trip down to Ironwood seem like a bad goddamn dream.
2. Kylie. I bite my lip nervously as I stand over the stove, stirring the mess of scrambled eggs and cheese that's cooking in our formerly non-stick pan. The amount of food I'm preparing for my dad is wildly optimistic. I haven't seen him eat this much in one sitting in months. Still, I tell myself it's better to give him more than he can eat than to leave him wanting more, even if some of it goes to waste. As the eggs set, I mentally run through the list of things I always do before leaving my father for any length of time. Food, his cell phone at the ready so he can call me if anything happens. TV is on, remote is handy. Mrs. Hellman's number on the post-it on the side table in case of an emergency. When I'm satisfied I've thought of everything, I turn off the heat and take the pan off the burner. I use the flipper to push the eggs off onto the plate I've set beside the stove. Soup's on, I call as I turn and walk into the living room. Thank you, pumpkin, Dad murmurs, glancing up at me with a wan smile. He's sitting upright in his recliner now, the TV showing some sports channel on mute. I pull the TV tray over and set the plate in front of him. Then, reaching behind me, I pull the fork and a paper towel that I've folded into a napkin from my back pocket. Voila, I say with a flourish. Better service not to be found anywhere. You look nice. Dad gives me an appraisal and a nod. Going out? Truth be told, the only thing that's different about me is I've brushed out my hair and put on a little makeup. But the fact that this apparently makes such a dramatic difference that my father noticed is sort of a sad commentary on the state of my social life. It occurs to me that Dad might think I'm going on a date. The realization almost breaks my heart in its sweet, simple, fatherly optimism. I don't have time for dates. Not only that, I don't have the energy to make flirty small talk and pretend like I'm just some breezy, happy 20-something girl. And frankly, even if I did feel like putting myself out there like that, there's no one in this town that would qualify. I've only been here a few months, but around here, that's plenty of time to have scanned my entire potential dating pool. Let's just say it's shallow, very shallow. I'm just going out to say hi to a friend for a little while, I reply casually. The anxious flutter in my stomach grows a little stronger. I put on my brightest face. I'll be home in just a couple of hours. Dad doesn't ask for more information. If he notices that I'm looking nervous, he doesn't say anything. I guess one of the silver linings of his illness is that he doesn't seem to be as perceptive as he used to be. But I know he's also careful to try to stay out of my life as much as possible. I think it's because he feels guilty about being sick, and especially that I have to take care of him. Whatever the reason, right now, I'm more than grateful that he's not grilling me, because I wouldn't want to try to explain to him where I'm really going tonight, or why. I lean down to kiss the top of my father's balding head. Wisps of patchy gray hair, must from his leaning back against the recliner pillow, tickle my nose as I do. My throat closes up, a sharp ache making it impossible to talk or swallow for a second as I fight tears. Reaching up, I stroke his scratchy beard and take a moment to breathe deeply and recompose my face. "Okay, I'll be back soon," I say brightly, giving him a smile. "Your phone's there. I've got my ringer on in case you need me. Just set the plate aside when you're done. I'll do the dishes when I get back."
"Don't worry about—"
he begins, but a coughing fit stops him. My smile goes rigid as I wait for him to compose himself. I fight to keep my emotions in check and off my face. The fits come countless times a day, but I never get used to them. They're a constant reminder of how close I am to losing my father, the only family I have. Time, we both know, is slipping away from us. The cancer that's eating away at him has a steady appetite. It's stage 3 right now, chugging right along towards stage 4. That means it's already spread, and without aggressive treatments, the prognosis is bleak. Unfortunately, we can't afford the treatments. With Dad having to quit work when the symptoms started getting bad, he lost his health insurance. And with me having to quit school to come back and take care of him, my part-time job as a receptionist at Curl Up and Die Salon doesn't provide much in the way of money. Which is why I'm going where I'm going tonight. Because desperate times call for desperate measures. On the way into town for my appointment, I try to keep my nerves calm by plugging my phone into the radio of my dad's truck and singing loudly to some of my favorite girl power songs. It makes my voice a little hoarse, but at least it starts my heart pumping. I'm just reaching the city limits when I get a text. It's from Mal, the person I'm supposed to meet. "Plans changed. Prez wants you to come directly to the clubhouse instead." What the hell? My heart starts to flutter nervously again. I was supposed to meet Mal at the garage. I've never been inside the MC's clubhouse before. I know from what he said in previous conversations that the clubhouse is in the building next to the garage, on the same compound. It shouldn't be a big deal, but... isn't the clubhouse supposed to be, like, off-limits to anyone but the club members themselves? I guess that's what I thought anyway. Somehow, going in there all by myself seems a lot more scary and intimidating than just driving the pickup into the garage like I've done in the past. By the time I get to the property, my heart is in my throat. I've seen the president of the Ironwood Lords of Carnage MC from afar, but I've never met him face to face. I didn't even know he knew who I was. I suppose that he probably wants to check me out, though, given the circumstances. He probably wants to see what I look like and decide for himself whether I'm to be trusted. In spite of myself, I have to laugh at the thought. How exactly does one convince a criminal, the president of an outlaw MC, that you're trustworthy? When I pull into the parking lot of Ironwood Car and Truck Repair, instead of turning right toward the garage, I go left. I park the truck on the far edge of the lot, in front of a smaller building that must be the clubhouse. A row of large, low-slung Harleys in front of the building tells me I'm probably right. I climb out of the truck, not bothering to lock it, and walk up toward the front door. When I get there, I hesitate. Do I knock? Do I just walk in? I have no idea. I wished I'd asked Mal what the protocol is. I consider texting him, but that just seems sort of ridiculous since I'm already here. Finally, I take a step forward and timidly rap 3 times. When there's no answer, I try again, louder this time. When that doesn't get a response, I decide I need to just get over myself. Grabbing the handle, I wrench it down and push open the heavy door with more force than I intended. It swings open and I go with it, half stumbling into the open space with a clatter of my boots. The commotion draws the attention of 2 large, tattooed men playing pool at a table in the center of the room. One of them, about to take a shot, lifts his cue and stands. For a long second, he eyes me with a mixture of laziness and outright sexual interest. "Well, damn," he drawls, one corner of his mouth lifting. "Is it Christmas? 'Cause Santa just brought exactly what I fucking asked for." I regain my balance and square my shoulders, willing myself not to show my fear. Automatically, my eyes flick down to the patches on the right peck of his leather cut. There's no officer's patch. "I'm here to see your president," I say. My voice sounds reedy and thin in the testosterone-laden atmosphere. The other pool player starts to laugh, a deep, rich rumble that sounds more sexual than it should.
"Is that right, little girl? Did Axel send out to Rennehummer?"
Is he seriously implying I'm a prostitute? I look down at my clean but worn jeans, an understated white button-down shirt, and decide that's probably his idea of a joke, and a challenge. "Mal sent for me," I retort, keeping my temper at bay, because the last thing I need is to lose what little control I have of this situation.
"Kylie,"
a voice calls off to one side. I turn with relief to see Mal himself ambling up. He motions with a finger for me to follow him. I shoot the pool players a cool look as I do so, lifting my head with what I hope is haughty dignity.
"You're on time," Mal murmurs as he leads me down a short corridor. "That's good. Axel doesn't like to be kept waiting."
What is this about, anyway? Suddenly, things feel like they're moving really fast.
"He wants to meet you, about the new route. Wants to see you for himself."
So this is a test of sorts. Well, in for a penny, in for a pound. We enter a small back room that looks more like a living room than anything. It has a low couch and coffee table, and 4 overstuffed chairs arranged on the other side. Sitting in the far chair, like a king, is the man whom I recognize as the president of the MC, Axel. Even seated, it's obvious that he's tall and chiseled, with intense deep blue eyes and a stare that could nail you to the spot. He's leaning back in a relaxed position, but even so, he looks like a man who commands respect, a man who never totally relaxes.
"This is Kylie," Mal says simply. "Sit."
I do as he says, thankful I didn't wear a skirt so I don't have to be arranging it to cover my legs.
"Tell me what you've been doing for us," Axel orders.
Huh, a man of few words. "I've been driving product," I explain, even though I'm pretty sure he already knows this. Whenever I get the call, I come to the garage and pull my truck in for repairs. I nod toward the other building. I drive in. Your mechanics do whatever it is they do. When they're done, I drive to the drop-off, an oil change place in Rush City. I pull into a bay there. They do whatever they need to do. When they're done, I leave. Since I know I'm being evaluated, I try to sound tough, unflappable. But damned if this isn't the weirdest job interview I've ever had.
"How's she been doing?"
Axel asks Mal. Mal nods.
"She's good. Reliable."
He glances at me. "She's got that innocent look. Good at flying under the radar."
"You think she's ready for the Cincy run?" I glance between the two men, resisting the urge to point out that they're talking about me like I'm not here.
Yeah,
Mal frowns. I think she's up for it. I exhale a breath I didn't realize I was holding. Axel stares at me for a long second, considering. Finally, he gives a curt nod.
Okay, we'll try you out. We'll double your current take. Trial basis, one run.
I want more than a cut of the money. Axel stops short.
What?
I want a cut of the product, too. The president of the Ironwood Lords of Carnage cuts a sharp look at Mal, then at me.
What the fuck, brother? He barks. What did you bring me? You using little girl?
I'm scared, but I can't back down now. Do I look like a junkie to you? I challenge. Axel untenses a little, but he's still peering at me, his eyes narrow.
No, you don't look like a dealer either. That's why we fucking hired you.
I'm not a dealer, I retort. I'm not a user. Beyond that, do you care?
Why do you want to get into this, sweetheart?
Axel asks. His voice has a strange, almost sad note to it, like he doesn't believe me.
Dealing drugs is a whole other animal. It's a dangerous fucking game.
His eyes travel down my body.
Especially for a sexy young thing like you. People get hurt, or worse.
In spite of myself, I scoff. Don't pretend you care about my well-being. I know I'm just an employee. I'm not a dealer or a user, I repeat. I just need regular access to something I can't get. I have my reasons. Axel leers at me. I feel a little bit like a bug under a magnifying glass. It's uncomfortable as hell, but I manage to stand my ground. I tell myself I don't care what he thinks. He has no right to know anything about my life. Take it or leave it. I give him a frank stare. Do I get the job or not? Axel blows out a breath, but grins.
Fuck, you're a tough one, ain't you? How much are you thinking?
I tell him the amount, which I've calculated based on the pain meds my father is currently using and won't be able to afford much longer. He blinks in surprise.
You're vouching for her?
Axel asks Mal again. Mal says yeah, that I wouldn't be here otherwise. She's smart. She knows how to be invisible.
Okay.
Axel nods.
Trial run. We'll do Dayton first, then we'll see.
Thank you. I'm trying to keep the relief out of my voice, but instead it comes out prim, reserved, like a little girl playing at being a grown-up. I hate it. Mal stands and opens the door. I follow him back to the corridor and out into the main room. We've only been in Axel's office a few minutes, but in that time the clubhouse has started to fill up. More than a dozen leather-vested men have come in, and someone has started up the music. It looks like the start of a lively evening. Thank you, Mal, I say, resisting the urge to hold out my hand for a shake.
Don't make me regret it, he retorts,
but his tone is half-teasing. I won't.
So, what are you gonna do to make up the favor to me?
Mal lifts an arm around my shoulders to pull me close, but I duck under it. Hold on, I laugh. Unlike the other men in this room, Mal doesn't scare me. What about your girlfriend?
What about her? He shoots back.
Don't you think Cindy would mind you making a pass at me? Mal chuckles.
Cindy'd be fine with a threesome. You down?
I roll my eyes. Not my scene, I'm afraid, I inform him.
Suit yourself,
he smirks, looking down pointedly at my ass.
You sure you don't want to stick around for a bit, though? The booze is free.
I shake my head. My gaze is already going toward the front door. I should be getting, I begin, but then my words die in my throat as my eyes fall on something. Someone I thought I'd never see again. His back is to me, but then he turns to speak to someone else. His profile is one I'd know anywhere. Oh my God, I whisper, as the walls start to close in.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?